the NFL podcast is still trying to burn down Ricky's old house.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Oh, yeah. The flagship show. Bud Light, I said.
You know that Erica is back when the Matt Money Smith opener line, all the aspects of the show where there's some sort of pick and choose dynamic to it, become Erica centric.
Yeah. Hey.
Am I wrong?
No, I didn't set it up.
Erica's here physically. She's sitting behind the glass, but after a European jaunt, she's not. I wouldn't say she's all the way checked in. Fair to say, Erica, at this point.
No, I do my job really well, and I show up, and when I clock in, I'm here, Dan. Ready to go.
Punch that clock.
How's that tea?
We do not need any more sound effects of you drinking from that cup again on this show. Get it done now.
Misophonia is a real thing. I think Mark has it.
Yeah, I have it, and you exacerbate it at every turn.
Hang on.
My apathy is helping me.
Mark Sessler has a lot. Apathy. Doesn't have a lot of apathy.
Is that not gross to anyone else?
It's not gross to me.
All right.
But I enjoy your bitter beer face there.
All right. Well, week 7. What a day it's been. Ryan Tannehill's back in our life, and he's a winner against all odds. We're going to get to that. We have the undefeated. An undefeated team stays undefeated. Some winless teams stay winless. So much to get to. And we'll cap it off with Sunday Night Football and a huge, huge moment for Chris Wessling, who is looking to get off the Lock Schneid in a big spot in primetime. So a lot to get to. If you guys want to start digging into the show?
Please.
Let's do it. And let's start with a team that's as hot as any team in football going on the road to Soldier Field. Saints football, baby.
Bridgewater under center. Quick throw out to the side. Taysom Hill across the goal line. Touchdown, Taysom Hill. It's a little variation of your bully ball there. Swing it out to Taysom Hill. He puts his head down, and good luck stopping that load with a head of steam.
You have to know where number 7 is in the red zone.
I like this.
How about that? Zach Streif and Deuce McAllister with the call. Get rid of that generic slop. Bring in Sam Spence. NFL Films. It's in our library, baby. You can't take it away. But you can try. I'm out the door if you do.
Save that voice. You're running out.
Teddy Bridgewater threw for 281, 2 touchdowns, including Mark to your boy, Taysom Hill. And the Saints improved to 5-0 without Drew Brees. 36-25 win over the Bears. Don't pay that final score here any mind. The final score is a disgrace. Because this game was as one-sided as it gets, huh, Mark?
Yes, it was. You're absolutely right. This is one where, for different reasons than sometimes, the box score translates into an ultra lie. Because before, you know, garbage time set
disgrace.
In... A total disgrace. This... We can turn negative on the Bears in a minute. I will say I think this game was a decisive turning point in the Matt Nagy, Mitch Trubisky experience. Mm. And it had a lot to do with a better coach and a better coach team coming into Chicago and completely ignoring whatever aspect you wanted to hand to the Bears before this. Was it their defense? No, it won't be the Bears' defense because the Saints' offensive line, one of the best in football, is going to come in and handle Khalil Mack and everyone else and pound them for 400-plus yards, 150-plus on the ground, and without Drew Brees in the lineup, without Alvin Kamara, it doesn't matter. Teddy Bridgewater, you know what? Yeah, you're halfway through this game and he's missed a bunch of throws and he's giving you what you're expecting from Teddy Bridgewater, but he doesn't turn the ball over. He manages this team. Latavius Murray on the ground did just enough. And in every single aspect you could ask, the Saints dominated. They had nearly the ball for nearly 40 minutes. And the defense is an absolutely phenomenal defense. I will say this, Chicago, when you're going to go out there and with minutes to go before this thing turned into garbage time nonsense, had 9 drives of less than 10 yards, fewer than 10 yards. Mm. And it is fair to look at the Mitchell Trubisky experience along with everything around him. It's not just him alone, but he's not surrounded with a lot of people to help him out. They had about 17 yards rushing in this disaster of a game. Mitch Trubisky is missing throws and doing all the things that are tied to the negative aspects of his career. This was a huge game. They are now 3-3. I think if you're a Bears fan, you go to bed tonight with a lot of deep-seated concerns about your team and where they're going.
It's a terrible look for the Bears. I mean, because, like you just said, no Drew Brees. But we already know that the Saints can win without Drew Brees. We've been seeing it for a month plus. No Alvin Kamara. Now, that's at the point where you'd think...
No Jared Cook either.
No Jared Cook, even though he's been a little up and down.
Last week, he made big plays.
I mean, this was a game where you should have seen a compromised Saints team struggle in all phases. But instead, Latavius Murray gave you more than just enough. He goes for 119 yards and two scores. Alvin Kamara couldn't be able to do much better, I'm sure. And so the Saints are as in great a shape as you can get. And we heard during the telecast, Troy Aikman spoke on the field with Drew Brees, who didn't rule out the possibility that he'd be back before the bye.
Sounds like that's the plan.
Which is just
next week.
More good news for the Saints. And and back to the Bears. Trubisky, who I think there's two ways to look at it. You could say, all right, he just got back from the injury. Let's be a little bit more patient. But then there's also the side of it where it's just like, the confidence looks like it might be shot, and maybe the garbage time helped here, but the confidence is shot. And in general, the Bears, they just don't look like a team that feels itself at all right now.
No, last year I argued that give the guy time to develop. You know, it's a new system. He's only in his first year starting. Let him develop. And he's gone backwards. It's sort of like Marcus Mariota, except accelerated. He's regressed in his second year, and I think at this point the Bears have to start looking around for other options.
They were down in total
as in
yardage.
This season.
If you can, I mean, I don't know what's out there. We've mentioned Nick Foles.
Marcus Mariota's out there, and the offensive coordinator in Chicago is a former coach of the Oregon Ducks. How about that for putting it together?
well done, Greg.
Here's the thing, though: the entire Bears team has regressed. And Trubisky is number one among them, but the offensive line's been terrible all year.
No running game.
They don't have a running game, and the defense is not as good. I know they had a couple splashy games, but when you're giving up long drives to Joe Flacco and you're giving up a couple really long drives to Derek Carr and the Raiders, I mean, they've been a very good defense, a top five defense entering today, but top five isn't the same as number one by far, and so that puts more pressure on your offense. And I think one of the most memorable things of the season happened today in Chicago. The crowd chanting Teddy, Teddy, Teddy for Teddy Bridgewater in Chicago. That's the Saints fans showing up on the road. I mean, that is something else. Nice. And Sean Payton's going to get his first coach of the year since his first year in the league, which ended with a loss in Chicago.
He deserves it. I know that there's Belichick and everyone else, but there are little things that Sean Payton does. You know, other coaches, even if they're good, they throw the challenge flag, and then, you know, it totally beguiled when it doesn't go their way. Payton threw an early one in this game that went the Saints' way and kept it. It took a big chunk of yardage away from Chicago. It mattered. These little things that he does and the way that he just scripts the offense differently week to week, depending on who's in there. And it was like a game where it's Matt Nagy. We both have backup quarterbacks. You presume yours is a starter. I know mine isn't, but we're still going to go in and school you.
Mm. And before we move on, my final thought, and I've had this thought all season, and sports can be humbling, but I keep thinking back to the summer and the hubris of the Bears, who brought in the 9 kickers, and this general feeling from outside the team, like they thought if we just get a guy that could put it through the uprights in the playoffs, we will be playing in February. Well, it's not always that easy, and we're seeing that right now because this team has so many more problems than they thought they did, and we'll see if they could dig themselves out, but it is not looking too hot right now. Let's move on.
Not too hot.
Jackson with first in the backfield. This is going to be a quarterback run. Jackson takes a snap, runs to the right. He's got a seam. He's to the 5. He's in. Touchdown, Lamar Jackson. And the Ravens have taken the lead again. That was old school single wing.
And that was a straight up wildcat play.
Great timeout. Great decision. Great execution. And the Ravens are back in front.
And that was on fourth down. Jerry Sandusky, Dennis Pitta. Dennis Pitta.
Nice.
I hope his hip's okay.
Yeah.
That gave him a lot of trouble.
Yes, it did.
And Jarrett Johnson, WBAL, with the call. MVP watch. Lamar Jackson ran for 116 yards and a touchdown, made some big throws, and took the Ravens to an easy 30-16 win. Yeah, easy over the Seahawks at the Clink. Wes, this game did nothing for you until Lamar got hot.
It wasn't easy for 2.5 quarters, and it wasn't easy to watch the game. There wasn't a whole lot going on. And then that sequence that we're talking about, the red zone in the third quarter, Lamar Jackson set it up with a really nice pass to Mark Andrews down the sideline, maybe his best pass of the day. And then K.J. Wright knocked a touchdown out of Mark Andrews' hands. Then Mark Andrews just flat out dropped the ball.
Tough day for Mark.
Got to be 3rd and 15. Lamar Jackson scrambles for about 13 and a half yards on 3rd and 15. So it's 4th and 2, and they send out Justin Tucker for the field goal, only to call a timeout and give credit to John Harbaugh, who has stood up at the podium and said, this is what's going on with our analytics department. This is what I believe in. This is how I'm calling plays now. We're aggressive. The 8-yard rush on 4th and 2 for a touchdown. The confidence in Lamar Jackson, the way Lamar Jackson played. And in that sequence, there was also a play where they didn't get the ball off in time. And it was a shotgun. And Lamar Jackson was as demonstrative as any quarterback you'll ever see. Mm. Upset with the center. The center snapped it late anyway. Lamar is midair jumping, snapped to his ankles, and he still caught it while he's like midair. It was amazing athletic play, but how demonstrative he was and how much he cared in that situation. And he took over from there. The Seahawks defense was so frustrated by his scrambling ability, his legs, and you could see they just sort of had no answer for him the rest of the way.
Well, they play football unlike any other team in the league, and on some level, any other team that's ever played, because he's on his way to setting the all-time rushing record for a quarterback.
He's on pace for almost 1,300
right.
rushing
yards. He's on pace to shatter it. But he only completed 9 passes today. That would have been better, certainly, if Mark Andrews had caught his passes. But the thing, I think, if you're a Ravens fan that you like is, I think the defense has been getting a little bit better each week, and Marcus Peters makes a big pick 6 today for them that came in handy.
Well, along with Lamar Jackson, the other story of the game was it looked like Wink Martindale was finally calling plays like he trusted his secondary again. He said, I'm going to bring the house, and I'm going to play man defense back here, and then we're going to dare the Seahawks to do it. And the Seahawks offense, one of the reasons why I can't really get behind them is I never know what their offense is. It just seems to be like, let's roll out the footballs and have Russell Wilson make magic. What happens when he doesn't make magic?
I mean, that
hadn't happened until this game.
Right, and that's why Wilson, a lot of people, when they talk about who's an MVP favorite, he's been near the top of the list because every week he's been carrying this team. So that's why the Ravens, we talked about this on the Thursday preview, their defense has not been good this year. And to look at the final stat line, Russell Wilson, 20 for 41, less than 6 yards per attempt. He threw a pick 6. This is stuff that has been completely foreign to the 2019 season. Anyone making Russell Wilson look human. So that, I mean, that's a huge credit to Wink and company.
Yeah, a defense that's been in flux, and they've made a lot of changes just in the past couple of weeks. The early results today were the changes worked great.
I know he was only sacked one time, Russell Wilson, but I feel like every time I looked up, the Ravens were in his face and making life difficult. And Greg, you mentioned that the reporting out there was that the Ravens, if they were going to trade for Marcus Peters, wanted him right away for this game. And he made a huge difference. And the Ravens are that kind of team. When they make a trade, it's not just to generate headlines. It's because it's a missing piece. It fits. I think the next missing piece for them might be a wide receiver. We mentioned that on Thursday. I'd like to see something else in the passing game. But when you're going to run the ball 35 times, nearly 6 yards per carry, I don't know. Maybe you just ride this out.
Well, and Humphrey and Peters is a legit combo, and even when they get Jimmy Smith back, that'll be even better. Josh Bynes, I think, who used to play for Detroit and has had moments, I think has helped out the middle of this defense.
I don't know why he went unsigned during the offseason. I thought he was one of the Cardinals' best defensive players last year.
That report was from Adam Schefter, by the way, and it is really interesting that he reported all this trade stuff happened this week with a call from the Rams to the Browns because they wanted Joel Bitonio for Marcus Peters. They said no. They ended up, making a lower level trade to the Rams. They call up the Ravens, and the Ravens said, yeah, we want Peters, but we want him this week. We want this trade to be finished in the next couple hours or else we're not going to do it. And it all happened very fast.
Well, I mean, you give up Joel, but who's guarding Baker Mayfield, My Little Pony?
Right. No, I think that was good by the Browns. You didn't need to do that.
I'd like to see that. Just out of curiosity.
I don't need to see that.
A cartoon pony.
Big win, 5-2. Right now they put some distance. I believe Cleveland market 2-4 is in second place.
I mean, it's a huge upset at this point with the way the four teams in that division are playing if Baltimore does not handle their business.
However, I agree. But however, I just looked at their schedule, and they have the Patriots next week, then at Cincinnati. There you go. Texans at Rams, Niners at Bills. So this is going to be a tough stretch for them.
They have the flip of what some of the other teams in that division had. I mean, it was a rough schedule for a bunch of those North teams.
They've done a nice job setting themselves up for that really tough stretch, and this was part of that tough stretch, and they got it done. Let's check in on a huge division showdown.
First down near midfield for the Houston Texans. Watson backs the throw. He's got time. Steps up in the pocket. Wheels it deep downfield, and it's bobbled, and it's incomplete. And they're going to say, what do we got? We have an interception by the Colts. Interception by the Colts. Kiki Cutie bobbled it, and then the ball tipped up in the air. Intercepted by Indianapolis, and it's Darius Leonard. Leonard comes up with a tip drill. The Maniac with the interception. The second INT of the ball game for the Colts, and that should do it.
What is everyone laughing about?
I will tell you in a minute. I don't want to. We'll get there
it's
in a minute.
It's Cutie.
It's not that, but it's. Oh,
Matt Taylor, Colts
funny too.
Radio Network. And yes, Darius Leonard back in the lineup, and he comes up with the game deciding interception. But to me, this game was about Jake Brissett. You're a star, kid. At least you were on Sunday. Jacoby Brissett threw for 326 yards and a career high 4 touchdowns, leading the Colts past the Houston Texans, 30-23. And with the win, the Colts move into sole possession of first place in the AFC South. And you know what? As we near the midpoint of this season, you know, it'll be week 8 come Thursday. You could not ask for a better situation if you're a Colts fan. For Andrew Luck to step away and leave the game right on the eve of the season, and then to be ahead of everyone in your division and gaining confidence by the week. A huge win, obviously, a week ago against the Chiefs. Now another big brand name taken out in the Texans, and their schedule really softens up ahead. So they have a chance to not only, now that they're ahead, they have a chance to put them in position to really put the heat on Houston to just to keep up with them if they can take care of their own business. And my big takeaway from what they did that was different this week is, like I said, Jake Brissett played so well. This has been a team that has run the football, played good defense, got good coaching, and moved the ball through the air when they had to. Well, this was a game where they couldn't really run the ball, and they needed Jake Brissett to do something special, and he did. And that's a huge lift for this team.
I was laughing because we do these hits for Sky Sports in the UK, and if you're the way the process works, it's a bit tedious. We have to send an email saying, here's what we're going to talk about.
They listen to this podcast.
Well, I'm not saying it's not it's just that it's email based, and I basically,
you heard what he said.
It's my job to, like, in this case, to send over, here's what Dan's going to talk about, and they will throw to us based off of these sentences that we send. And I was meant to say for Dan, the Colts won in a very different way today. And all they wrote was they won in a different way today. So like seconds before we're on the air, you know, Alex Mason, our beloved producer over there, is saying, Dan, who on earth was it that you were discussing?
Hey, mate, you got to be more clear.
And who's, I'm like, they, what?
I didn't do it. Mark did it.
And it just was a melt. Sorry. It's
like my two young sons pointing at each other when there's a spilled milk on the ground or something.
Right.
Anyway, yes. Big win for the Colts.
I love when teams go into the bye week and you can see when they come out of the bye week that they had some ideas about how they're going to attack differently. And I think the Colts knew what their reputation was. They're the slowest paced offense in the league. They're the offense that's going deep down the field and not explosive the most in the league. And they come out of that bye week and they throw the ball around and it works. And you know what? I think it's really key, and who knows if they'll stay healthy, but we haven't seen the Colts defense all year. Today we did. Sheard, Denico Autry, Darius Leonard, all back on the field at the same time. And for a defense that doesn't have a ton of talent, I think it's important that they're healthy because all those guys play almost every single snap, even on the defensive line.
Darius Leonard jumped right in, 10 tackles, 7 solos, a pick that changed the game at the end. I do think he would have been defensive player of the year, 1, 2, or 3 candidate had he not suffered this concussion.
Credit to the Colts beat writers who have been pumping up Zach Pascal since training camp.
He goes their number 2 guy.
106 yards and 2 touchdowns today.
What did the Colts do, or what did you see out of your boy Watson Yeah, at this point, the Texans being held to 23 points is like, I see that as a great job by the defense.
Yeah, it was. We, you know, we just talked about you don't want to always depend on, like in Seattle, for your quarterback to have to put on the Superman cape. But Watson, like Wilson, is one of the few guys that can pull it off. He just didn't do it this time. He threw two interceptions in the fourth quarter. One was a terrible throw when he threw off his back foot across his body into the flat for an easy pick. And then they got off the field immediately to keep them in the game, and it was a two-score game. And he throws a pass a little bit high to Kiki
Kute,
who maybe should have had the ball, but it wasn't put on the numbers. They would have more points if the game officials didn't bang Watson on an in-the-grasp call, where he did an amazing job because he's one of the great athletes in the sport of staying on his feet with people trying to drag him down, hits DeAndre Hopkins for six. They wave it off because they decided he was in the grasp. I don't really get the ruling. I know it's done to protect quarterbacks, but usually in that situation, the quarterback gets walloped anyway. And it cost them 4 points, as it turned out. So, and that turned out to be a big deal. But Watson was good, not great. And this is a game where they needed him to be great, and he wasn't.
Thought they'd have a chance to maybe, you know, run away with this division. That seems a lot less likely now. They do get the Colts on, I believe it's a Thursday night game, but they also play the Ravens and the Patriots. All those teams kind of battling for seeding.
Well, Dan talked about this Colts schedule. Their next four games, three home games. In that four, they play Broncos, Steelers, Dolphins, Jags. You can't draw it up much better than that.
And consistency continues to haunt the Texans, because I feel like every 8 or 9 days we're talking about how amazing they look and how they're a real threat. And then they drop one of these games, which I wouldn't call it a stinker. Going on the road and losing to a good Colts team in a competitive game is not the end of the world. But they committed 10 penalties. They had the two turnovers. They had three drives where they went into deep into Colts territory and had to settle for field goals. They just need to be sharper and really kind of start stacking wins like they did last year.
Colts team is likable, though. I mean, wouldn't it be fun to be covering Jacoby Brissett and Frank Reich at the Super Bowl? Why not? Let's do it, Colts.
Eric Ebron made one of the catches of the year.
Incredible catch.
With the Texans, I'd rather follow a team that hits you with those occasional high-ceiling moments where you feel like they could beat anyone at certain times, than a clunker that's going to go give you 10 wins, but they are limited, and you're fooling yourself if you think they're going to do anything beyond total marginal 10-win season disappearing into the mist.
I think these are both playoff teams, and I wouldn't be surprised if they play again.
AFC's a mess. Why not?
Let's move on.
Snap to Rodgers. Back to throw, deep drop. Rainbow's right side. Overall's got it. 10-5 pylon. Is it a touchdown? No, he stepped out of bounds apparently. Or is it? And apparently it is. Overall, 37 yards. Touchdown strike for Aaron Rodgers.
Wayne Larrabee.
Look at this song.
I mean, I'm just picturing Joe Namath in the hottest club on the Upper East Side, just going ham.
This feels like French Connection Part 3 or something. What's happening here?
I love it. Let's play this for every game.
Packers Radio Network. Aaron Rodgers looks like an MVP again. Rodgers had his best game by far under Matt LaFleur, throwing for 429 yards, 5 touchdowns, runs for another score. Flower power. Packers beat the Raiders 42-24 at Lambeau. The win moves to the Pack. The Pack to 5-1 keeps them alone atop the NFC North. Greg, the Packers are fun again. Not good news for the rest of the NFC.
It is not, because Aaron Rodgers has total command of his offense right now, total command of the game. I thought he had it on Monday night. I thought that game was one of the best I've seen in years from him. The surroundings, not as much. Today, it showed up in the stat sheet. They only had the ball 8 times with Aaron Rodgers. They scored 6 touchdowns in those 8 possessions, and he scored on all of them. And the sequence to end the first half and to start the second half, where they had to move down the field quickly, to me, told you everything. They didn't run. They didn't call a running play in either one of those drives. They scored touchdowns in both of those drives. In that Kumerow touchdown, he looks off the safety. He hits Kumerow down the field. He was living in turkey holes today. I mean, half of his throws were just beautiful throws that not many quarterbacks could make. 8 plays over 20 yards to 6 different receivers. So they weren't that healthy. Valdez Scantling and Geronimo Allison did play, although they were limited. eight guys caught between two and four passes. So it's a bunch of guys, you know, Alan Lazard and Jimmy Graham actually made a couple of plays that you don't expect, but he just seems to know everything that's happening. On the rushing touchdown that he had, he saw where the blitz was coming in the middle of their defense. He changed the play, and he just ran it in because it was just that easy.
Yeah, and you know this, he wanted this game because, as I pointed out,
I wanted this game.
This is backed by no evidence, but you knew he was annoyed when Aaron Jones had the four touchdowns on the ground that one game, and they had an otherwise great game on offense, but Rodgers didn't get to stuff the stat sheet because that's how you win MVP awards.
It's a fair theory.
Well, he has a funny way of showing it.
Add six touchdowns to the ledger today, and all's even Steven.
That first touchdown that he had today was to Aaron Jones, and it was a back shoulder throw on a corner route by a running back, which is just the highest degree of difficulty you could have for Jones, who had to turn around at the last second. Aaron Jones makes some plays every week that just blow you away. So it's not that he doesn't have any talent around him. He's got Aaron Jones.
Where are we at on this white jacket that the Flower wears every week? Does that bother you, Dan?
I think it's flower power.
I mean, the Flower can do almost anything he wants to do right now.
Keep wearing it.
I don't like the look. But I have to admit, when they've been dialing up shot plays, like they dialed one up in the first half that it ended up being a penalty, but it worked. And they came out in the second half, and you could tell it was a LaFleur special. I mean, Tony Romo was singing sea poems about the play calling that LaFleur had. And they knew what they were going to do first play out of scrimmage, and he hits him for 55 yards.
Go ahead.
Romo with sea poems, Rodgers looking like an MVP. I cannot wait to go home and watch this on Game Pass. This is the first game of the year where on Sunday I'm like, yep, I'm definitely queuing that one up when I get home.
Well, they're an NFC bye team right now. I mean, they seem to be, you could see it with the offense in little stretches here and there, getting better and better. And the Flower kind of reminds me of like young Al Pacino in like the first Godfather, where his voice is crackly and he's like, wait, you're the lead character of this movie? Right. But then you get him 10 years later and he's like a completely different human being. Maybe that's the arc of the Flower. He starts as someone that we're kind of questioning.
It's only like mid-October.
Flower.
What if he's there for 10 years? He might be a totally different dude. The Flower is going to keep blooming.
I mean, the crazy thing is that the Raiders offense played quite well in this game. They lost the ball twice with inside the 1 yard line. Once they were stuffed in a goal line stand. Another time, Derek Carr lost a fumble reaching for it like he did a couple years ago, or else they would have had a lead 17-14 with a couple minutes left in the first half. They went up and down the field pretty easily on the Packers. And I think John Gruden is coaching amazingly this year. I mean, Derek Carr doesn't have any talent other than Darren Waller around him either. And they are just moving up and down the field very methodically. But Carr, even though his numbers look great, in three of the first four drives, he was the reason they stopped. He missed throws on third down. And when you play this kind of like short in the field, we're only going to have eight possession type of style, when you miss a third down throw, it's almost like a turnover. And he missed a couple to end otherwise good throws. And he had that fumble. And it was like they were no coming back because their defense is awful.
That's what I've been telling you. Wait, let's see if we can get through another offseason with Gruden not falling for some other quarterback somewhere. It's going to happen.
By the way, I'm bailing on public consensus. I'm now for losing possession when you reach the ball out like a fool. And Derek Carr, like great player, an incredible player, great man,
having a good season.
Good family
I think.
Man, and his numbers, he's closing in on Drew Brees' all-time record for completion percentage. But you got to be better about protecting the football there in that spot. That killed him, changed the game.
Their roster isn't good enough for the playoffs, and that starts on their defense. But I always think it's important in seasons like that, when you know your roster isn't ready yet, to find those building blocks. And Darren Waller and Josh Jacobs are stars. They're stars.
Yes, they are. Jacobs was so good today. He ran over Adrian Amos on the first play. He had another monster game. Waller's amazing. The defense, I think, is just one of the four or five worst in the entire NFL. And you're not going to beat Aaron Rodgers, I think, unless you have a pass rush, and they do not.
Well, outside of Khalil Mack, they inherited that. I mean, and there was a long way to go with that defense.
True. Although they did draft, you know, a pass rusher with the number four overall pick, and he's giving them very, very little. Max Crosby, their fourth-round pick, is giving them a lot more.
Let's check in on another great division battle.
One wide receiver in the game for the Vikings. It's Diggs to the left, second and six. Cousins play action. He's going to fire deep. Diggs right side. Yes! Diggs caught it at the 30. Angles to the left, 25-20. He sprints to the 15 to the 10. Holding on tightly to the ball with both hands. And he's taken down. down at the four. Stephon Diggs comes up huge on a 65-yard reception. It's first and goal, Vikings, and look what happened.
Paul Allen, one of the great voices in the National Football League amongst the broadcasters, Vikings Radio Network. I loved that call. I love it when teams have a chance to close out a game and they could run the ball through a cloud of dust and punt it away and hold on for dear life. Or you could go win a football game, which is what they did. Kirk Cousins connects with Stephon Diggs on that 67-yard catch and run from deep in their own territory with 2 minutes to play. Cousins threw four touchdown passes, and the Vikings win 42-30 over the slumping Lions, who have suddenly lost three in a row. And yes, you heard it there, play action, that has become what has changed with this offense in these last 3 weeks, where Cousins has become the most productive passer in the league. A stretch where he's completed 75% of his passes, thrown 10 touchdowns against one interception, throwing for, I think, 325 yards per game during this winning streak. And it's play action. And just to give you an idea of how much it's been a change and how it's clearly something they realized they needed to be taking advantage of, is for the past three games, 150-plus yards of Cousins' total is coming off that play action. In his, let's say, 16 games last year and whatever it was before that, four games this year, so about 20 games, he only did that once. So they realized that they weren't taking advantage of what should be something that could kill defenses, and now they're killing defenses with it. And, Wes, this is such a far cry from where we were 3 weeks ago when Kirk Cousins was the capital T, the capital P problem. This is why I got excited about the Vikings offense coming into the season, because when you have the skill talent they have, if they find a way to get into that top gear, 500 yards today.
Well, that problem combined a couple of perfect storm scenarios that everybody always overreacts to the first couple of games of the year. So you have the normal September overreaction, and then you have whatever it is about Kirk Cousins where everybody insists on apportioning blame to the quarterback after the game. No matter who's at fault, it always goes to Cousins. I'm glad that he's doing this. I'm glad he's playing with more confidence, that he's less timid, that they are a balanced offense, and that's what Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs were saying a few weeks ago. We need to be balanced because nobody's going to be afraid of us if all we do is run the ball. And you're right, Dan. This is the offense you thought you were going to see in the summertime. And Mark's right, because he sat here 2 weeks ago and says, show me something, Vikings. And they did. They showed you that they might be one of the best teams in the NFC now.
Well, perfectly delightful when they do this and use their weapons the way they should.
I feel
like
it's strong to say Mark was right about that.
No, I think that's
he said they were a team that had no chance to win in the playoffs. Maybe they could possibly
not the way they were playing then.
Well, you guys
not the way they were playing then.
You guys are not giving him the proper credit for the fact that the Vikings are now showing Mark something is what's going on.
Well, that's good. I'm sure they're happy about that.
When you were suggesting they can be this the best offense in football or the NFC.
You were saying they could change, and they have.
All right, but I was suggesting they weren't playing up to their parts, and they weren't.
I just feel like Wes is such a good man, and he's a good friend, but he's bending over backwards here on this angle.
Well, Mark saved me from locking up the Falcons, so I owe him a bunch of compliments.
Gosh, that is
I mean, all right, this is becoming absurd, but I will say this. They had issues, and I wonder if it wasn't maybe Mike Zimmer that at some point in the process here had to say, my idea of offense needs to change.
There
Kevin Stefanski was a guy that other teams wanted, and Kevin Stefanski, I'm assuming, was more creative than this offense appeared to be with its play calling over the first month of the season. So, you know, it's not all on Kirk Cousins, but they were more than just Delvin Cook running 45 times a game.
Well, and they were playing a defense you can move the ball on. The Lions have given up, I think, more than 450 yards of opposing offense. Three straight games is the first time since they went winless.
And six straight games of 100-plus yards on the ground allowed.
And the Vikings, to their credit, they lose Adam Thielen to an injury. He might not be able to play Thursday night. I think Irv Smith is a guy to watch. Adding a little more dynamism to their tight end position, and Irv Smith gives them that.
BC Johnson, too.
Just makes them all the more dangerous.
On the Lions side of the ball, we've now hit the point where it teeters over to the negative side. We were giving them credit for hanging around, hanging in games against really good competition, which is good. It shows that they have progressed year one to year two under Patricia. And yes, you guys get jobbed. You got jobbed last Monday night. It doesn't mean that you certainly should have won the game, but it really did work out in your favor, some of those two calls. But again, this game was there for the taking, and Detroit has not been able to find a way to close out these games, and they're 2-3-1 now. They have not won this month because they had a bye in there as well. And in the division that they play in, and we, you know, we just talked about how great the Packers were. I think we all believe that the Vikings are a team that can win 11 plus games potentially. The Lions just seem like they're in deep trouble now, and this was a game they needed, and they couldn't get it done.
They are, their schedule does ease up, I would say, down the stretch, other than the division schedule. But you have to win these. You're going to have to win these division games, and you're quickly starting to run out.
I just think they're a team with some young parts that you could believe. But they lost Kerryon Johnson early.
He got
in this
killed
game.
In this game on injury.
Darius Slay too, and this is the concern with him, that their starters are fine, but if they get a guy like Kerryon Johnson or Darius Slay injured, from starter to backup is a chasm for this team.
Dan, would you like to take a sip of your tea? I feel like I've kind of blocked you out of that because of my issue.
Well, you can always press the cough button and you wouldn't hear it, right?
That would just that's a good point, Greg.
That would be the considerate.
He actually does this. There is a point where
that would be the considerate thing to do. Really,
it's hard to hold the cough button and take.
Yeah,
and move your microphone.
Oh, it's so tough.
And talk as you've just.
I mean, the struggles we face.
The equipment is not cheap. Gentlemen, so to get crazy with the cough button while you're trying to lubricate your throat in a big spot.
Well, I'm not listening to that argument.
By the way, the Adam Thielen hamstring injury on Football Night in America, your boy Greg, Mike Florio, reported that they view it potentially as more a week to week rather than day to day. He ain't playing. They're playing the Redskins on Thursday.
And Florio's tuned in with the Vikings, closet Vikings fan.
Also, if you're blaming Kirk Cousins for that injury because he somehow threw him into the wall,
oh, stop it!
Reevaluate your life choices, please.
Somebody's doing that?
I saw people blaming Kirk Cousins for that injury, which they thought was some kind of knee in the wall thing. It turned out to be a hamstring. Either way, it wasn't Cousins' fault.
Fools. He's like, you want to keep honking and complaining about not getting the ball? Here's this wall.
Eat the wall, baby.
Wes and Cousins are going to be going on vacation together soon. I mean, it's just like constant.
I mean, you guys are the kissing Cousins corner.
I've been lost in the mix here. I mean, this is going straight to the source.
Whatever it is about that guy, he rubs some people wrong to such a degree that everything gets blamed on him, no matter what it is.
You like that? Not everybody does. Let's move on.
Ouch.
Ouch.
13 seconds to go as this game is all but over. Four-man rush, case to throw. Heat from the backside. He's sacked at the 9-yard line, and that'll do it. And the Niners are all sliding over the field. They're looking like a bunch of fools out there, Cooley, but they win the game. They win the game. And you know what? Redskins going to remember that one day. You watch.
Will they now?
Who was that?
Oh, you know who it was. Larry Michael and Chris Cooley. Yes, I had Ricky pull that because I got some tweets. You got to check out the Redskins call at the end of the game. They're crying in their beers.
That was something.
Nick Bosa sacked Case Keenum to run out the clock. Belly flopped into a slip and slide celebration. Bosa and the Niners get it done in the elements. Driving rain.
How come the box score is only showing like first quarter stats for Case Keenum?
And heavy wind.
Fair question.
Claiming an ugly 9-0 win over the Redskins. Mark, the Niners are 6-0 for the first time since 1990. Good job. No style points were necessary given the conditions.
What a beautiful, amazing, intriguing game this was. And I'm not saying that in a way that I'm not poking fun at it. I truly enjoy these kind of games thrown in occasionally to the mix of 42-36, 9-0 in a game that took 2 hours and 36 minutes. And I thought to myself, I can't remember us being together and watching a game because I'm looking for that game.
That's a Greg Maddux special.
I'm looking for that.
I mean, quote, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen, Mark Sessler, around 1 o'clock today.
We all want different things in life and in football. And in this, I thought this has got to be the fastest game in a while. And I shot a note over to NFL Research, and they confirmed, at least since the time we've been together, it is. And it goes back to week 16 of 2009 when the Jaguars and Patriots played a game that was also 2 hours and 36 minutes. The reason that happened is because this is the first game of the year that I can remember, outside of some wind in a couple of fairs, where the weather absolutely, whatever game plan anyone went in with, it was absolutely blown to pieces by kickoff, because and if you were watching the video show here or you were listening to them, the players jumping in puddles at the end. From the first quarter on, anytime a player was brought down to the earth's surface, it was just a gigantic puddle of wet covering them. I mean, it's the kind of thing, if you've ever played in that, and I have because I played in Pop Warner and high school, guys. When you're in a wet weather affair,
Wait, did you say both?
What do you mean?
You played in both levels?
Yeah. Oh. I wouldn't say I played a lot in high school. It was just sort of
It's got to be its own podcast.
There's a lot to work with there. The deciding factor here was the Niners' defense, and it's not a surprise. It wasn't a huge challenge, obviously, because Bill Callahan decided to run Adrian Peterson like we thought he would 450 times. And the Niners, though, 154 yards allowed all game at 3.8 yards per carry. But I would just throw all stats out of this. It really was about one team needing to get hot and on one or two drives, and you knew it was over. And the Niners did that. Jimmy G had 10 yards passing at half. They really couldn't run the ball either for a big chunk of this.
I'm weirdly invested, as of people that listen to every show or plugged in on this maybe a little bit, in Adrian Peterson passing Walter Payton on the all-time touchdowns list.
81 yards.
He gets a ton of carries, doesn't find the end zone. It does remind me of a game, if you'll let me go down memory lane. In 1993, as a 13-year-old Jets fan, the Jets went to Washington and won 3-0 to improve to 8-5 that year. Then they lost out and missed the playoffs. Mm. But it was the same exact situation where it was miserable conditions.
Right.
Nobody could get anything going. And I guess in D.C., you know, they got the Nationals to look forward to. This game probably they don't even think about. Another sad day at FedEx Field.
I'd say one quick thing, that the Redskins, this game would have taken on a different complexion. They open with a 12-play, 54-yard, run Adrian Peterson 9 times drive that took up nearly 9 minutes
Walter.
Off the clock. That's how you win a game like this. And they basically were shut down right near the goal line and missed a field goal. And you knew at that point, I wanted to say game over, Niners will not lose this. But it went on for another hour plus without the Niners scoring. I think the Niners are a team that can win a lot of games in a different type of way without their quarterback being the deciding factor, because Jimmy G, I like him a lot, but he was not the difference today.
Well, Nick Bosa has weirdly maybe not gotten enough love as one of the great pass rushers we've seen and enter the league.
It's incredible.
In our lifetime.
Oh, number one on my list of defensive rookies list.
I mean, I think at this point, he's in the mix for defensive player of the year.
Come on now.
I really, when you look at the pressure rates, and especially what he's done since he came back from the injury, granted that's only a couple weeks, but he dominated this game.
Pressure rates don't win that award.
4 tackles for loss. He's starting to get sacks as well. He got a sack, 4 tackles for loss in this game. He's winning almost every snap. It is crazy to see what he's doing. And when I went back and watched the Rams game, and on the coach, they have a chance. I know it's super early, but they have if we're going to talk MVPs at this point in the season, the defensive line has a chance to be one of the great defensive lines. If they're totally healthy, they have a chance to just go like win a Super Bowl by themselves, that group. Because Armstead is playing like a Pro Bowler. He's the fourth guy on there. Bosa, Ford is playing well. Buckner, it's just a crazy group. And if Bosa can stay healthy, he's playing at a level as high as almost any pass rusher.
Yeah, that's probably lowering his sack, but there's so many other faces on that defense. And the reason they only got 3 sacks on Case Keenum is because he only had 12 attempts today. They kept him out of harm's way the best they could, and they still wreak total havoc on him.
One note on the Redskins, they have gone a full calendar year between home victories.
That's not good. And Mark,
but don't worry, they were going to remember that celebration.
Well, that fan
they're
going to
get back at him in 2039 when they're
oh, no.
back.
Remember the puddles?
Oh, two more things about this game, and then we'll move on.
Oh, there's a lot more.
Kyle
Shanahan deeper than two.
Gave the game ball to Mike Shanahan.
All right.
Fired once upon a time. So that's a nice little thing.
So Mike made the visit just for revenge.
I guess so.
That's a very Shanahan-esque tale.
That's good.
And finally, and just this speaks to how rough things are for the Washington Redskins right now, this was homecoming day. And the conditions. I mean, what got washed out, basically.
More like go-home day. I mean, just get out of there as quick as possible. And they helped him with the shortest game in a decade.
Mark, they say that weather is the great equalizer in football. In your experience as a Pee Wee football player, did you find that to be true?
The teams that I were on were very mentally tough, and there were other factors. Weather wasn't really something that would get in our way for the most part.
Let's move on.
He takes the quick snap, looking right all the way, lobs the ball to Gurley, out of the backfield.
Over the shoulder, he brings it in. Touchdown, L.A.! Todd Gurley with one of the great catches of his career back in Georgia for the first touchdown of the game.
He's the voice of Westchester, J.B. Long of the Rams Radio Network. Jared Goff threw for two touchdowns, ran for another score, and the Rams rolled over the Falcons 37-10 in the building where their offense melted down against the Pats in Super Bowl 53. The Rams, they end a three-game losing streak in the debut of Jalen Ramsey, who, Wes, maybe you can let us in and what they did to get him on the field in terms of whether it was Toradol or a brace, you know, whatever to do, get that back straightened out so they can play. Anyway, first off, you do owe Mark a hug for moving out of the Falcons lot. Lock.
And I don't know. You should get half of a loss for that, I feel like.
Absolutely not.
And two, the Rams.
The score.
And two, 37-10. The Rams needed this bad.
Yeah, it's borderline miraculous. I don't know if they brought some miracle healer to the scene for Jalen Ramsey to be able to play. But not only God was he playing, he was tracking Julio Jones around the field and jacking his jaw the whole first half. Mm. And then I thought, one of the big turning points in the game, Julio Jones beats Ramsey for 39 yards. Then he beats Ramsey again down the sideline, and the ball right in his hands. He has to stretch out and dive, and it was so close to being a catch. It would have put them right on the doorstep of the end zone. He couldn't quite reel it in, and the Falcons never recovered from that. And then the rest of the game was just a series of points at which I didn't think the Falcons could get lower. And then I just underestimated how low the Falcons could get.
Ouch.
Well, it doesn't get lower than Matt Ryan getting hurt.
Well, before that, Devontae Freeman got ejected for doing something stupid like trying to pick a fight with Aaron Donald. I don't know why anyone would.
On the same week, someone sucker punched Myles Garrett.
Although, Donald kind of took his manhood by holding him up, basically, and walking at the same time.
That was probably the biggest gain Freeman's had all year.
Ooh. Ouch. You know, we're sponsored by the Marine Corps, and you don't impose your will on a man like that. That's disrespectful. You pick
That's
him up like a little boy.
Is. Imposing your will on the other
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, you pick him up like a little boy. It's disrespectful. You know, the Marines, we don't go for that.
It is
surprising. They just beat him 37-10.
I'm not surprised that the final score that the Rams scored, but the fact that the Falcons only scored or only had 224 yards in a game that Ryan did play most of is pretty surprising.
It's the same thing we've seen all year. He was hit on 11 of his first 22 dropbacks and no running game because the running back doesn't make anyone miss. So that's a problem. The offensive line's a problem. And then a couple of near catches. But it was certainly not one of Matt Ryan's better games.
They're in that mix now for the top because their schedule's tough. They're in that mix for the top pick.
Especially if Ryan Jarrett.
Top
they could lose
pick.
Out.
He was hobbling. And word after the game is that they don't think it's a serious injury. It looked like something he could probably go out there and play on in a Patrick Mahomes limited mobility kind of way.
And again, on Sky Sports earlier today, we were asked, Wes, by Neil Reynolds, if Dan Quinn could be out the door sooner rather than later with the bye week coming up in week 9. And it's like, well, what does that matter? Sometimes that feels like that's overblown because it seems like we're nearing a certainty territory that he'll be let go and he won't be the coach in 2020. What does it really matter if he's let go when they're 1-8 or whatever it will be at the bye week?
The bigger question is if they get rid of Thomas Dimitroff and they really blow up the whole thing. I don't necessarily think that's a good idea, but it's probably something they're considering.
Well, it's usually a little bit easier than we think to read these things, and it has to do with credibility. If the coach has lost the locker room and nobody's buying in anymore, you know, Deion Jones after the game says, we got his back, we're going to keep fighting. And you know, the owner, Arthur Blank, said, I still support Dan Quinn. So it doesn't feel like he's lost them. It just feels like
they're lost.
They haven't had a sack. They popped this up on the screen during the game. They hadn't had a sack since September 21st. It's been over 300 snaps now since they've had a sack.
Long way from that playoff game that you guys were at,
yeah.
Rams Falcons.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit, you know, going back to the Bears, where if you're Matt Nagy and you come out of a game like this where the offense laid a gigantic egg, it's like this is why you were brought in. And Dan Quinn's defense has not been a Dan Quinn defense in a long time. That owner is not a knee-jerk reaction type of guy, though.
He said he's redistributed some of the play calling duties on defense going back to last week.
Look at this flex on Sunday Night Football. The graphic, most consecutive years as number one ranked show in primetime. Sunday Night Football, 8 seasons passing American Idol, The Cosby Show, and All in the Family. What a flex.
Wow, I think that's like the first time in
the middle
years
of a telecast
that we've kind of
broke the fourth wall.
Yeah, we've broken the fourth wall. We're talking about Sunday Night Football, but that's what did it for you.
I mean that's wild.
I do like those tweets. The NFL occasionally sends these tweets out where it say the top 25 programs of the last, 3 months, and all 25 are NFL games. And it's just the league being like, hey, you say our league is down. Here's a bunch of middle fingers.
That's when you. If you want to
that's
know
how
why,
I read it, at least.
Yeah, if you want to know why Al Michaels has 4 Rolls Royces in Malibu.
Does he?
That figure.
What else is on right now? Probably. That's right. Unless you're like, DVRing 60 Minutes and watching it for the third time in a row.
It's total. It's any show and any, they just dominate the landscape.
That's like 270 minutes, Mark.
No competition.
Let's move on. Oh, this
Rivers takes the snap, gives it to Gordon.
What
did he get
disgrace.
In? No, he did not. The clock is stopped with 7 seconds to go. There is a lot of discussion. I don't know what this is about. I'm not sure why the Titans defense took off running. And he's losing the ball. He appears to be he's losing the ball. That's what it is. The ball is coming out. And Woodyard, I think, is the man who recovered it. That's what this is. That's what it is. We couldn't see it. The Titans have recovered the football. That's why they came running out. If it's ruled a fumble, which it should be, the Titans have won this game. We've never had an ending like this here.
Mike Keith, beautiful call.
Wow, I love that.
Titans Radio Network. Oh, my God. Jarrell Casey. Is this the song Shaq uses? I was going to put us in the crosshairs.
Uh-oh.
Might have to scrub this one.
There's no way he listens.
That's true.
Jarrell Casey recovered a fumble by Melvin Gordon at the goal line with 15 seconds to play. The Titans somehow pull out a 23-20 win over the Chargers in the Dirt Nap Bowl, as we, I believe, titled it. Welcome to the underworld, Chargers. Greg, even by the standards of the Los Angeles Chargers, this loss was absurd.
No, this was something special. This was something different. Unfortunately, I had to trade for this game. Had the pleasure of watching it. This may go down as one of the greatest trades since Steve Young to the 49ers.
I mean, let's not act like it was a trade. You basically imposed your will on me, like Aaron Donald and Devontae Freeman.
You were very nice. And you know what?
If you're listening for the first time, you have no idea what we're discussing.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
We trade the assignment. This game was insane how it ended, and we can talk more about the rest of the game. But the ending sequence where Melvin Gordon got a chance to lose the game for the Chargers drives me crazy, because Melvin Gordon got way too many chances to lose this game for the Chargers. 16 carries, 32 yards, got the ball 3 different times on the goal line. The first time in the first half, he was stuffed, and he kind of almost fumbled it. They didn't call it a fumble. There was some debate whether it was a fumble or not. They end up scoring on a throw to Gordon the next play. This time, they get the ball back on the goal line. There's some back and forth. There's a false start. There's a whole lot of everything, like 2 overturned touchdowns where the Chargers thought they had won. But the reality is Gordon fumbled on the goal line, which you absolutely cannot do, and he recovered it. And then Anthony Lynn gave him the ball back, or whoever's calling the play, Ken Wisenhunt, gave him the ball back again, and he fumbled it again, which is just insane and drives me crazy, because Austin Ekeler is the only reason they were in this game. They were down 10 with 6 minutes to go, and I said to Wes, the Chargers are like one of those dogs who start clearing the way, for when they want to take a nap. They were digging up the dirt. 10 points down, 6 minutes to go, but they came back about as fast as you possibly could because of Austin Ekeler as a receiver doing everything, and then you give the ball to Gordon to lose it.
Good
animal analogy just thrown out.
Not even your best analogy. At one point, you seemed to compare. You had a plumbing analogy in which Austin Ekeler was somehow Drano and Gordon was a ball of tangled
hair.
He's
clogging the toilet. He's the toilet clogger.
I called him the anti-plunger.
This backfield, to me, shows how good NFL players are. And I'd love to see a coach, after a holdout, Don't let that guy back on the field until he proves that he's better than the guy he's replacing. Mm. And Gordon has not proven that missing training camp and missing September, he's a better player than Austin Ekeler. You need that practice.
You're absolutely right. And there was a mandate right away. We're going to get him on there. He's going to see playing time. In the three games he's back, they're 0-3. Not all his fault, but he's not helped. He has a combined less than 100 yards at less than 2.5 yards per carry over three games, all losses for the Chargers, who are now, as Dan mentioned, 6 to 7 feet under the earth.
You were enjoying the end of this game, Dan, because it was just...
Dan predicted it, basically.
A slow-motion car crash that you couldn't believe what was happening.
The Gordon fumble was two touchdown scores where the officials ruled touchdown and then they got called back on review. It was so clunky the end of the game. It took about 45 minutes to play the last minute of the game. I think for me and some of my more higher moments of self-loathing around the Jets when things are going bad, I'll point out that nobody really knows how to lose and shock you with their dysfunction and failure like the Jets. Are just really good at thinking up new ways. The Chargers fans and their fans, they get it as well because there's only one team that would figure out a way to blow that game, and it's the Chargers.
Right, in regulation. At worst, you would have thought they could have kicked a field goal there, although they're on the one-inch line with 45 seconds left.
It's such a unique Chargers thing to fail that way where they – got in the end zone twice, got called back twice, and then you give it to the guy you definitely shouldn't give it to. You're basically daring the football gods to smite you, and they say, all right, if you want us to, we'll do it. And who's left holding the bat? Chargers fans who have been suffering for years and years and years.
One question, Greg, because this was the Ryan Tannehill experience beginning, and there was an interesting report that he and his agent, or it was a report, essentially the information came from the agent, that they handpicked Ian's report that because the Titans felt like the team where the quarterback in place would either A, get hurt, or B, lose the job due to performance, which is a weird thing for, in the locker room, I would imagine, to come out, in the middle of preparation for week 7.
That's sports.
Yeah, that is weird. I mean,
that's sports, though. It's like, smart.
I know the agent wants to look smart and everything, yeah. But Ryan Tannehill played well today. He threw the ball really well. Delanie Walker had a quote. They said, what's the difference between Tannehill and Mariota? He said, well, he throws it harder and he gets rid of the ball faster. I was like, well, those are two good things. Now, in Tannehill fashion, this was a good Tannehill game where he threw it really well, but he still had an interception and two fumbles. And he took a couple hits in the second half. And the interception came on a hit that was maybe not his fault. But this was actually a game where the offense has moved the ball quite well. There's only 8 possessions each. It was just like a long, slow – if you like long, slow possessions that end in misery, this is your game.
You had the day I could have had, Greg.
And I know Titans fans out there, some of you don't like me very much, but a lot of my – frustration and doubt of that organization was always around Mariota, who looks like he's out of the picture. So he's gone. Now you got to get rid of the uniforms. That's a grisly look. Mm. The blue.
You quickly latched on to the next bullet point of your annoyance.
I like
those.
It's not nearly as important as a quarterback, but I just think they need to reboot the whole logo thing. Clear it all out and start again.
I feel like they're not out of it.
Throw out the quarterback. Throw out the uniform,
Greg.
You hate everything.
Throw out the logo.
They're 3-4. I mean, this was a big. I know you guys don't think so, but I think it was a big game, especially looking at both teams' upcoming schedule.
Well,
their
first-round pick came and played.
Jeffrey Simmons.
Throw it all out, Greg.
Okay, Jeffrey Simmons was one of the stories of the day. He's returning from a torn ACL.
That he suffered while preparing for the combine. This was only in February.
An insane comeback, and he was maybe their best defensive player. He had a sack. He had 2 tackles for loss. He had a QB hit. And someone pointed out he's made a bigger impact in terms of tackles for loss and QB hits than Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, and I forget who the other first-round defensive tackle is in one game. He had a really great game for them. So
I kind of believe in Mike Vrabel. I don't know. I'm not sure always why that is, but I kind of just...
Mustache.
Maybe on defense and special teams. I don't believe in anything this team has.
I like the look of
offense.
A.J. Brown. These teams look very even, though.
Well, they could have lost, and they would be 7 feet under the ground, between 6 and 7 feet. That's the Chargers instead.
As a child, Mark, of the 70s,
okay.
and the mustache, which was, there's nothing more paternal than the mustache in the 80s. It was the dad look. I think that's what you're connecting with.
Yeah, but
you could trust. He's got broad shoulders. He's a guy, I'll protect you. I'll take you through the darkness. And I think that's what's hitting on.
You're not totally wrong on some of that, but my dad never had a mustache, so I'm not interested in someone else's dad.
That's a whole other can of worms. Whole other can of worms.
I generally grew up feeling that mustaches were a tad creepy. The cops had them.
Vrabel's like the dad you never had.
I'm not sure that's it either. We can keep trying or we can move on. I don't know.
All right, let's move on.
First down at the 20. Josh takes the snap. Looks, fires straight down the middle. It is caught. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. Smoke, John Brown. Touchdown, Bills.
An excellent throw by Josh Allen. John Brown running up the seam. He goes in motion, and he runs up the seam, working on Ryan Lewis, beats him to the inside against man coverage, and Josh Allen knew exactly where he was going with the football and delivered a strike to John Brown.
John Murphy and Eric Wood of the Bills Radio Network. Smoke.
John Brown's nickname.
I thought it was Smokey.
Well, a lot of people call him Smoke.
Okay, that's cool. That's fine with me. He's had a good role with that team, and he's having a nice season.
Been a true number one.
And he wasn't the only star for the Bills. Tre'Davious White forced 2 second-half turnovers. Mecah Hyde returned an onside kick for a touchdown. The Bills rally from a 5-point deficit. 31-21 win over the Miami Dolphins, who are still looking for their first win. But incremental progress, I feel like. Wes, White saved the Bills from potential humiliation on Sunday.
Yeah, he was the difference in the game. It's the second week in a row where you look at the Dolphins' offense and say, yeah, they're much better with Ryan Fitzpatrick. As we've said, that could change in a week or two when he's throwing everything up for grabs. But he calls out the protections better. You can see that the offensive line plays better for him than they do for Josh Rosen. Mark Walton looked really good running the ball. Preston Williams and Devontae Parker. You can find worse wide receiver duos than those two. The Dolphins did not look inept, and they finished their touchdown drives, whereas the Bills were settling for field goals. And then Matt Hawk, the Dolphins punter, took a fade field goal up the gut and was tackled just shy of the goal line. It looked like the Dolphins were going to get another score. They were already in the lead. They're going to put this maybe out of reach. Oof. And then Jordan Phillips strip sack. Dolphins fall on the ball. And then Tre'Davious White next play. Diving interception. Josh Allen gets the ball. Goes 6 for 6 on the drive. Touchdown to John Brown. Next series for the Dolphins. Tre'Davious White forces a fumble. And then the game's basically over from there. Tre'Davious White saved them. And for all we've knocked Josh Allen, I think he's less predictably bad than guys like Trubisky, where, Mark, you had that stat where it was like 9 straight series or whatever. He couldn't get 10 yards. I think just when you think that you have a handle on Josh Allen being a bad player, he does things like that 6 for 6 drive, and he uses his legs, and he'll throw a touch pass once in a while where you think, if this guy can put it together, he really is a dynamic athlete.
It seemed like he was always the quarterback where when he's doing something in the positive column, it might be so incredibly athletically unbelievable that you have to have him on your team, and that's why certain scouts...
He's also the guy who can be throwing less than 50% completions
right
in the first half against the 2019 Miami Dolphins, which when you start playing...
He's also the guy who can be 10 for 11 for 111
sure
yards and 2 touchdowns
right,
in the
but
second
that's against
half
the Dolphins.
To win the game.
You've told me all year that none of these games against the Dolphins count, basically, or mean much, and so that's a team
so
that
what
I would
is
expect...
this, like you just wanted to get shots in at Josh Allen it's, here?
It's, or no, I'm just
it's,
saying...
With our podcast, there are 3 things or in life that you can count on: death, taxes, and Greg taking pot shots at Josh Allen.
It's not pot shots. I'm just saying, if we're going to be consistent, they...
Oh, this, you've been consistent.
Like, they need to be better on offense against the Miami Dolphins. That's all.
I mean, I don't think
fair
he's saying anything out of... I mean,
no,
Josh
I
Allen
think
absolutely is...
I don't think
you know
he's saying anything wrong. I'm just amused by you're always the guy to jump in and say, but actually, he's terrible.
He hasn't played well at all this year.
Well,
I mean,
I think
if you're
at all,
if you're ranking
there's
the
not spots where he's played well.
Do you
but
see
he has
growth from
well
last
spots
year?
No,
I do.
Really,
I think he's been one of the bottom 6. I'm just saying, in a league where there's so many good quarterbacks, he's one of the bottom 5 or 6, and that hurts. That hurts your
but
team.
But you also never factor in his running ability, which for him is a big part of his game.
Sure.
At 5-1, not to also be a wet blanket here. It's been a pretty soft 5-1 start. I still need to see some, you know, marquee wins before you start saying this is a team that has the defense and makes enough plays on offense to shock some people in January. maybe still need to see a little bit more from the Bills.
Well, don't you think that we always look at teams that jump out to starts like this in unorthodox defense or special teams first fashion with a sideways view? Because it's got to come from offense or we don't believe in it.
We have, after the Eagles next week, they play a slate of teams that don't have more than two wins, four more in a row: Redskins, Browns, Dolphins, and Broncos.
Well, they'll be 11 and I have no problem with them being 11 and 5 or even maybe 11 and 5, and then what happens from there when you have to...
I think they have the pieces to play better on offense. I think Allen can be corralled. I think they can be better.
But if he's a bottom six quarterback,
that's a problem.
You have to, even in this offseason, think about what you're doing at quarterback.
And outside of Tre'Davious White, their defense was not that impressive today.
All right, let's finish out the rest of this Sunday slate. That's
it
all.
Dalton in
the shotgun, two receivers to either side. Dalton throwing in the four-man rush. It's going to be a screen, and it is picked off by Yannick Ngakoue to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, pick 6. Yannick Ngakoue extends the lead for Jacksonville.
Can you hear the hammer pounding on the nails? That's the nail in the coffin for the Cincinnati Bengals in this ball game.
You're at 6 feet under.
Frank Frangi, and I don't know if that was Jeff Lagerman, my boy Lagerman, or Tony Baselli, but somebody is launching attacks. The Jaguars radio network. No Jalen Ramsey, no problem. Yannick Ngakoue returned an interception 23 yards to the house, clinching a 27-17 win for the Jags over the Bengals. Still looking for that first dub. West side of Cincinnati, quiet again. Wes.
They never stay that
no
quiet.
No chilly tonight. Mark.
Feels like a 70s rock song. No chilly tonight.
Mark, it was part of a huge defensive showing for the Jags, who stuck Andy Dalton on a stick and made him their ginger-haired scarecrow forever.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know how to follow that up.
Put that in your power.
I appreciate that, because you've come up with something, a new way to describe the Andy Dalton experience. And anyone who watched the end of this game, you are dealing with a quarterback that threw three interceptions over the course of five attempts in three possessions that utterly buried Cincinnati's chance to take a game where they were very much in a manageable situation to win against a Jaguars offense that put together drives of 9, 11, 9, and 12 plays, moved the ball but could not score. Field goal after field goal. They finally did punch it in, and that separated them from Cincinnati, but the Bengals had a chance. And I get it. Look, at Andy Dalton is, you know, working with an offense where Alex Erickson had to catch 8 passes today to be the leading receiver, and they cannot get anything going on the ground. Their running game, and it has to do with their offensive line.
I got a stat for you.
Hit me.
This is one of the most amazing stats you'll hear in a first half of the season. To this point, the Bengals have rushed for 372 yards. Their opponents have rushed for 1,323 yards. They are outgained by nearly 1,000 yards 7 weeks
into
the season.
It's got to be a record.
They're on pace for the worst rushing team in the Super Bowl era before this game.
And they gave up 216 today.
Wow.
And so that's been the thing week after week, is their line on both sides are – totally dominated. So you can't just look at Andy Dalton.
I mean, their running backs ran for the called runs was 0 yards. That's hard to do.
Joe Mixon.
16 runs for 0 yards.
Whoa.
Joe Mixon, 10 rushes for two yards.
We figured out Andy Dalton years ago. He rises and falls based on what he has around him, and now he's never had anything worse around him than he has now. Now he's worse than he ever was. He needs a fresh start.
In Chicago!
He needs to go somewhere
where he would
have a chance to get his career back on track, because both sides need a refresh here.
Third-round pick for Andy Dalton at the trading deadline. Who says no? Just do it, Bears.
Oh, I love that.
Just do it, Bears.
I love that.
That would be interesting.
I would love that in a second.
The problem with Zach Taylor and the Bengals is, I know they're trying to run a certain type of offense that he's familiar with. You can't have Andy Dalton throwing the ball 43 times with what he has around him.
When your running backs go 14 for 0.
I get that, but the whole thing is so broken down.
It's a disaster.
The Jaguars were no treat either, but they saved their season because they lost this.
Your boy Minshew.
They moved the ball. I mean, they struggle, and they've done this all year long, closing drives, because they get into the red zone and it falls apart, but he still throws the ball aggressively. Gardner Minshew also is, you know, he's not Josh Allen, But he had a couple key scrambles today that kept the drive, kept drives alive. Every game he's going to give you that. And he did not throw an interception. And for me, it's like this is a guy that you can ride with.
He ran for 46 more yards than the Bengals running backs combined.
Yep. My God. All right, let's close out the pre-Sunday night football slate.
Now the Cardinals have it first and 10 at the Giants 22. Handoff, Edmonds. He breaks left. Is he going to do it again? Yes, he is. Touchdown. Chase Edmonds has three touchdown runs. 20, 20, and now 22.
This game was supposed to be about the return of Saquon Barkley. Instead, their star running back was Cardinals backup Chase Edmonds, who rushed for a career-high 126 yards, a career-high three touchdowns, 27-21 win over the G-men at the Meadowlands. Greg, Cardinals sacked Daniel Jones 8 times, too. Mm. Maybe they're not terrible, or maybe the Giants are.
I mean, they're not terrible. The little Cardinals are wondering, well, what are we going to do, Dan, to move up in the rundown? We've won 3 straight. We haven't lost in all of October.
Not there yet.
We've got Chase Edmonds, a 5'9 running back out of Fordham University, outshining Saquon Barkley. I mean, Chase Edmonds has been
awesome.
Going
to New Orleans and beat the Saints next week.
Right.
Be high in the rundown.
The three teams they've beaten could not be worse. I think they've won a combined 3 games. So I get it. But they only won 3 games all of last season. And the running game that Cliff Kingsbury has brought to Arizona travels. Because you didn't have David Johnson today. They started him. He had 1 carry, and then he didn't play again.
Wow.
And Edmonds carried them, along with a defense led by Chandler Jones, who had 4 sacks all by himself.
Hey now.
Daniel Jones sacked 8 times. Daniel Jones fumbled 3 times, had an interception. He has now thrown 7 picks and has 5 fumbles in his 5 starts. And it's disappointing because this was the game you're kind of waiting for, where you had Ingram and Barkley and Tate all on the field together. Ingram had a disastrous game. Barkley was fine. And the Giants offense was really kind of the lagging group of this game. In a rainstorm. Yeah, I get it.
Giants offensive line has not been a total hot mess this season.
The last couple of weeks, the communication in recognizing where the pressure is coming from, and that happens so many times
today.
That's
on the quarterback.
You could see that Arizona was like, we're just going to keep sending stunts, and we're going to keep sending blitzes and doing all sorts of different things. And by the end, it was just a feeding frenzy. And Chandler Jones especially, you know, like punched his Pro Bowl ticket. And when you get those 4 sack games,
budget,
that looks nice.
Was he going against Nate Solder?
He was on both sides,
okay.
I believe Remmers and Nate Solder both had their share of struggles. I mean, Kyler Murray had 104 yards this game. I thought this would be like a high-scoring game where both quarterbacks did a lot. Not so much.
You know what I heard?
3-3-1, though. They're at 500.
That's
the Cardinals. They're interesting.
That's good times.
You know what I heard, Greg?
Yeah.
I heard the biggest star of this game was actually upstairs in the booth. Greg Olsen on the bye.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
An absolute masterclass. one of those, remember early Romo when people were like, wait a second, we might have something special here? We got a situation here. I mean, I'm sure Booger's not sleeping tonight because Greg Olsen is right near the end of it's been an excellent career, and people are talking. The streets are talking about Greg Olsen in the booth.
He was awesome to the point where I was just like, who is this new announcer? I like this guy. Like, he's making a lot of smart points. Like, I've never heard this voice. And I checked, and it's Greg Olsen. And, yeah, he was a joy to listen to throughout. Analyzed the game very calmly. For a tight end, you can really see, like, the game from the quarterback position, just, like, breaking things down and teaching you
stuff. How about this for a quote? Greg, I know you love this stuff.
I do.
That's why I'm directing it at you. Kenny Albert was his partner.
I like Kenny.
It was a good duo.
Here's what Kenny had to say, according to The Athletic. I don't think I've ever gotten that many texts or tweets during the game about an analyst that I was working with, and it was 99% positive.
Wait a minute. What was the 1%?
We got a star. Well, you never can please everybody.
We heard him in the playoffs
last year. Might have been the analyst he was with last week.
We heard him in the playoffs last year, and I thought, in his first, like, ever game announcing, he's already second best behind Romo.
It's kind of nice to still, like, you're in
and
a job.
And he's just dropping in for during the bye week? That's
right.
Kind of wild, too. I mean,
right.
that's breaking boundaries.
You're, like, in a job, and then you already know that the minute that you decide to leave the job that's paying you millions and millions of dollars, that you'll just roll in as a class favorite.
I'm ready to put out the sandwich right now that he's in the booth at Monday Night Football. the season after he retires, whether it's 20. Wow.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
You're not taking me up on it?
No, I agree with you.
Take me up on it right now?
I mean, there are human beings involved in that process.
Oh, what a guy you are. What a class act you are.
I mean,
Mark.
I'm just waiting to when I can watch it again.
It was very disarming to have a guy
in the
booth. I don't
feel comfortable.
And then at the end of the game.
It just feels like an aggressive wager for our show.
It does feel a little aggressive. Feels a little
aggressive. Everybody calm down. I know what's really going on here. We'll talk off air.
Or not.
All right.
We will never talk again, Dan. This is it.
You keep sipping your tea.
This is the end of our relationship.
All right. Let's move on.
Tavon Austin in motion, coming to the left, and they will pitch it right to Austin. He's got a first down, 15, touch at the 10, running to the 5, to the pylon, touchdown, Tavon Austin. Stop the presses, the Cowboys have scored a first quarter touchdown.
The Sham God, Brad Sham, the Sham God with the call, Cowboys Radio, KRLD. When Tavon Austin is starting action with a touchdown, you know your offense is going to have a good day. And that's what happened for the Dallas Cowboys. In fact, everyone on the Cowboys had a good day in a 37-10 win over the Eagles, a win that snaps the Cowboys' losing streak at 3 and sends the Eagles deeper into their existential funk. And if you're Jason Garrett, Greg, who after a week, you know, this happens almost every year for going on a decade, there will be weeks during the season where people will be pointing at Jason Garrett and saying, that man's the problem. Get him out of the building. They need a better head coach. And perhaps they do, Greg. I think you're one of those people that believe that. Ooh. And that's okay. But this was, as Chris Collinsworth put it well at the end of the game, the pressure relief valve has been hit.
Absolutely, especially going into the bye week, to get Randall Cobb and Amari Cooper and the best tackle tandem in the league in Lael Collins and Tyron Smith back, you're going to look better. I think their offense hasn't been the problem the whole time. We talked going into the show, it's been the defense. Can Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith and DeMarcus Lawrence, can they start making some plays? That's exactly what they did in the first half of this game. They gave their team a few extra possessions by winning the turnover battle, 3-0. The Cowboys did have a couple injuries with Robert Quinn and Vander Esch in terms of the second half, but by then the game was over. It is pretty impressive to see the Cowboys win that convincingly, and yet somehow it's not totally shocking the way that the Eagles have been playing, especially the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Cowboys didn't implode in the red zone this time. They've been moving the ball up and down the field pretty consistently. They just haven't been scoring consistently, and today everything just clicked.
Yeah, I look at the Eagles, and I thought before the season started, I pointed to them as the team in the NFC that I just believed in the most from top to bottom, front office, coaching staff, roster. I knew they're not perfect, but you thought this is the team that I thought would be there at the end. Watching them tonight, last week it was the secondary, tonight it was the defense again. I watched their offense too and just say, identity free. I don't know what this offense is about. Greg, I think you kind of mentioned there was sort of this sort of bad energy around the whole Eagles operation tonight. And it's just, I go into week 8 wondering what this Eagles team is right now.
I think about the late Tony Sperano and his famous bury the ball. You bury the ball, you bury the pass. This is very close to, not very close, this is a bury the ball game for the Eagles. But you know what the problem with the bury the ball game is? It can't happen on the same week that your head coach tells the media, and I know he would try to walk this back, we're going to go to Dallas and we're going to win. And then you don't show up. It doesn't mean the Eagles are done. But to Mark's point, they have been one of the biggest disappointments in the entire league, I believe, through 7 weeks. And they still have time, West, to get back on track. And you know what? I'd be surprised if they don't. But at the same time, it's been bad and it's been rough. And they were not competitive tonight. That is not a good sign. Not a good look.
Well, we give the Eagles a lot of credit. I think we have confidence in their general manager, the coaching staff, that it's a strong roster. And then you can't – if you believe that, then 132-year-old wide receiver who's a deep threat shouldn't throw off everything just because he's out of the lineup.
Right.
No.
DeSean Jackson being gone has hurt them. And they've been prone to some stinkers. Look, they got blown out by the Saints last year much later in the season, the middle of November, and they bounced back from that. They lost by 40 points. But it's strange to see them in two straight weeks on the road against other playoff-type contenders. And I think we're clearly the inferior team in both games. I don't think they were that close to the Vikings. I think the final score was appropriate. And when you look at these two teams, they're both very tough to get a handle on. But what's been consistent? I think the Cowboys' offense has been consistent, especially when they're healthy. And what's also been consistent is the Eagles' defense being lame. I mean, they've been a pretty bad defense throughout, and their offense works really hard for everything. I mean, Wentz, for the most part this season, we like what he's done, but
they had a running game outside of the Green Bay?
No. I mean, they get some plays in the receiving game from Sanders, but they seem to be working so hard, whereas in the past, I feel like Peterson and Wentz, like, things just came much easier. Wentz missed a couple big-time throws tonight where he had open receivers, so it's not just one thing.
This was a game where the field is 110 yards going uphill both ways vibe for the Eagles.
I mean, the Cowboys, what a great night. I mean, Jason Witten, the montage of Jason Witten fist
pumps. Do we have that for the video show?
Oh, yeah. We do. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. NBC put together a montage of Jason Witten doing, like dad fist pumps from he just won the second set tie break in the men's over 45 championship at the old tennis club.
He basically is just farting on Monday Night Football right there. He's saying, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Kid Rock concert, and they just went into Ba with the Ba. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, this is my college jam.
Some great Witten fist pump analysis. I enjoyed that.
You know who wasn't doing all those things we just mentioned?
Bah, what the bah, the banged it. Go ahead.
Mark or Wes, who locked up the Cowboys, baby.
Nice job. And Mark, you really saved your buddy here.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Got out of the Falcons lock, which was, you know, godforsaken.
Poorly conceived.
And now you're on the board. You end, and I said it on Thursday show, internationally, this story is picking up steam. You're going to be all over the papers if you would lock up
papers?
The Falcons. It was gonna be grim. So good job with that. In fact,
Wes was being boycotted in China. So it's, you know, you're back. You're big in China. You're good in China again.
Actually, I have a comment to make about what's going on in Hong Kong right now, but I will save it for the end of the show. Greg also locked up
the Packers.
The Packers. We went 4-0.
Hey now,
so how about
first
that?
Time in
all season.
We don't mention locks at all for all those weeks we were terrible. But now that we went 4-0,
you're damn
and
right,
we're
Greg.
Like we're almost like 2 weeks away of from doing that again, of getting to 500. Let's honk about it.
Hey, listen, it's been a rough ride so
always
far.
Always forward, never back, Greg.
What you guys can't see is Erica's face right now. She wants us all taken out by wild animals before in the next minute or two.
All right. That's it. Good job by the Cowboys. Bad job by the Eagles. And yet, you do feel like the next time they play, the game will mean something. That's just the way this division works, typically.
Eagles got to figure it out, though. NFC is pretty deep. It's going to be a little trickier to slide into one of those wild card spots.
Week 16, they'll meet again, but in Philadelphia. We'll see if that game has huge ramifications for both teams. All right. We'll be back on Tuesday, where we will recap the Monday Night Football Classic between the Jets and the Patriots, and then do a bunch of other fun stuff.
Might be a classic.
I hope it is. I feel like it would be good for the Jets if it was a classic. Because could it be a classic if the Patriots win? Probably not.
No.
But if it's being hailed as a classic.
I mean, if it was a great game that the Patriots won at the very end, it could be
a classic.
If they won 100, if they won 100-0 and it like changed football history, it's still not a classic.
If Sam Darnold throws for 6 touchdowns, but Tom Brady throws for 7, including a 48 yarder at the buzzer, that's got to be a classic no matter who wins.
I take that as a Jets fan.
Okay.
So give me that.
Ricky tried to end this show 67 seconds ago. Let's go.
I'm fine, you guys. I'm loving it.
All right, run the music.
Just have us spooked.
This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, Ryan Bartlett, and friends behind the glass. Thank you, everybody. Till Tuesday.